Hello, Judge. How are you today? Thank you for being with us again.
Oh, thank you, Ron, for having me back. I enjoyed talking with you so much last time.
Well, I did too, and I just can't wait to get back and chat with you. So we're going to go right in, okay?
Sure.
Okay, we're rolling. We are back live all across the USA and around the world. You are listening to Ron Sedgy today. And a few weeks ago, we had the honor of having our next guest with us. I enjoyed the conversation so much, I immediately asked if we could have him back. He's on a terrifically busy schedule, but he's a fascinating individual, and he's going to be talking about a show now that is on PBS that we chatted about last time called A More or Less Perfect Union, and the coffee table book that he has out, Voices of Our Republic. He was first appointed to the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia during the Ronald Reagan administration. He is a professor at Harvard Law School, assistant United States Attorney General in charge of Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice. That was a former position, along with many more, too numerous to mention. Joining us right now is the Honorable Judge Douglas H. Ginsburg. Hello, Your Honor. Welcome back to the show. I'm sorry I can't go down all the things you've done in a remarkable career, my friend.
Thank you, Ron. Delighted to be back and to talk to you again about this program, A More or Less Perfect Union. I worked on it for about 3.5 years, and I sometimes think that I'm becoming a one-note instrument here, because it's what I like to talk about.
Well, you know, it is a fascinating book, and the series is unbelievable. You have in the book a picture picture of a gentleman by the name of Robert Chittister. And I knew Bob way back when in Pennsylvania, when he was a general manager of a public broadcasting station, and he's part of this coffee table book, is he not?
Yes, he started this production company called Free to Choose Network that produced A More or Less Perfect Union. And it was Bob's inspiration to do a program on the Constitution. He wasn't specific at that point as to how it would look, but he approached me about hosting the program, and I was intrigued, and we worked it out over a period of months, and then we're off and running, and took about 3 years to do the whole production. So, yeah, Bob was absolutely key to this, and he's been a great source of great programming for public television over the years.
Oh, yes. He managed a station called WQLN up in Northwestern Pennsylvania, and I did a lot of stuff for him then. Fascinating guy, he really is. You know, you talk about lessons of today, and I love the fact that you stress the fact that if you don't read history, you don't know what happened yesterday, and you don't really foresee what's going to happen tomorrow because you're not looking into what has happened in the past, you never can handle the present. And there are so many things in the Constitution that really is a schematic for our day-to-day life. And it's a shame that civic lessons, which were very prominent when I went to high school, seem to be leaving the scene.
Well, that is exactly the problem, and that is the reason that I was so interested in taking up Bob's suggestion to do this program, because in addition to reaching the public television audience, the 3 hours of programming are used as the basis for a curriculum in secondary and middle schools. And the materials, excerpts from the show, plus questions for discussion and additional documents and so on, that's all been sent to 170,000 teachers of civics and history. It's good to know there are that many teachers of civics and history left in the country,
right,
because so
right.
many school systems have eliminated these courses. I have some good news to report since we spoke last. Ron, a few weeks ago, the governor of Florida directed that every public high school there will restore and have a civics course, and required. And Illinois just passed a law to the same effect for all the high schools in Illinois. So we're getting some pushback here against this trend of downgrading and ignoring civics education. I think people have started to wake up when they see that so much of the public, especially young people, can't name the branches of government, let alone have they ever read the Constitution. So
it's sad. And I'm glad that that's the case, because I think the last time, Judge, we talked about the fact that I thought that this three-part series should be part of every high school and junior high school across the United States, because this is a great story of how this whole thing came about.
Well, thank you for that, Ron. It's a sad story, too, because so much of the original Constitution has been eroded by ambitious politicians getting and getting the tolerance or the blessing of the Supreme Court to alter the structure of the Constitution. I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but the Congress is no longer the primary source of our laws. They have delegated so much of their lawmaking authority to administrative agencies. And in a recent Congress, there were 18 times as many regulations with the force of law as there were actual laws coming out of the Congress. So we are now being governed not by the people we've elected, but by the people that the president has appointed, and that that we don't know. They're faceless bureaucrats, and they're our lawmakers, and our elected representatives are not having to vote up or down on the things that actually matter to people. So you know, these agencies have the ability to impose very significant burdens on individuals, on companies, on the economy, and the Congress never votes on it. That's a very sad situation.
I think the thing that I fear the most is the fact that this wonderful document that we have called the Constitution was so encompassing of future generations by the forefathers and the authors of it, but not knowing what life was going to be like 200 years from now, as we don't, it's amazing that it's been able to stand the test of time as it has. What I'm concerned about, and I think you're alluding to that, is the interpretation that people take. For example, the news media, of which I've been a part of for half a century, is didn't even exist for the most part, except for newspapers. And I don't know if it's even applicable to today's mass media situation. I think when you talk about people coming in and interpreting the Constitution, they can find some legal area to go to that it wasn't intended for initially.
Well, that happens all the time, and the Supreme Court has been key to that happening. I mean, the Supreme Court has, in some cases, imported into the Constitution and taken out of politics important controversial matters. This happened, of course, with Roe versus Wade and with same-sex marriage. These were matters that were being debated in the state legislatures, and changes were occurring too. And then the court intervened and made it a matter of the Constitution through a very tenuous chain of reasoning, and created a much more aggravated controversy. You know, when politics is allowed to run its course, when legislation is negotiated and passed by a state legislature or the federal legislature, it's a compromise. It has to be. You know, it's not that somebody wins and somebody loses. There's definitely a compromise. But when a court decides things, that's not often the case. It's usually one side wins and one side loses, and that's the end of the matter. But it's not the end of the matter when the court intrudes itself into a matter that isn't really squarely in its province and that is a politically contested and salient issue. So the Supreme Court has a lot to account for here, I must say. And you know, this mixing of powers, this delegation of powers, the Supreme Court has accepted that. They've approved it as constitutional in cases starting in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. The extraordinary expansion of the administrative state in the last few decades, certainly in the post-war era, all comes from the court saying, well, yes, the Constitution says the Congress can regulate commerce. But that means that it really can regulate anything affecting commerce. And, of course, there's a world of difference between those two things. What goes on in my backyard does not affect commerce. But the federal government is able to regulate that on the ground that it affects commerce.
Well, so, and of course.
Yep.
Well, throughout history, that has been the case where the government has interfered. I mean, the railroad strike with Truman, the steel strike with Kennedy. I mean, all of these things have come into play, you know, and I think that's, again, based on how the the Constitution is interpreted. By the way, I do want to make mention of the fact, ladies and gentlemen, that this series on PBS, A More or Less Perfect Union, is not a history lesson that you have to sit through and it's very laborious. This is a very exciting presentation, the way the judge puts forth the content of the show. And the coffee table book, which is sensational, by the way, Judge, I want to tell you. I mean, they talk about, the people in this book are anywhere from Justice Ruth Ginsburg, which, by the way, is no relation, to Gene Simmons of KISS. I mean, so it keeps the reader, and in the case of the television show, the viewer, really involved, because it's a lot of opinions, not just, you know, an opinion of the very old or the very young.
Oh, that's right. The book, which is called Voices of Our Republic, is meant to bring home the centrality of the Constitution to the American people and to who we are as a people. So people from all walks of life are entitled to and should have an informed view of the Constitution. And the people commenting in that book, not just journalists and lawyers and judges, but as you said, Gene Simmons, Jack Nicklaus, the golf champion, a famous chef is in there. They are people who have taken the time to think about the Constitution and have said something interesting about it. And that's what we want in the public. We want to, those are fine examples of what we would like to achieve with the general public, a public that really understands where they live and how it got the way it is and what can be done to improve it or at least stop the erosion.
That's so true. Well, you know, Judge, as I told you before, I could talk to you for hours. You need to come down to Florida, or I come wherever you are. I would love to break bread with you. I know that you are on a horrendous schedule today. We were lucky to get this interview, and I appreciate it so much. The name of the series on PBS, check your local listings. It's a three-part series called A More or Less Perfect Union, and the book is entitled Voices of Our Republic. Judge, please tell Bob Chittister that I said hello, and I'm going to give the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, a call and congratulate him for putting that back in the schools in the state of Florida.
I will, and I hope you will do that, because he deserves a lot of credit. I think it's great.
Certainly does. Would you join us again, Judge? I know I'm becoming a pest in your book of appointments, but I find your fascinating discussion, and I think it's so important to disseminate to the general public.
Well, there's nothing I'd rather discuss, Ron, so whenever we can make the time work for the both of us, let's do it.
Okay, I'm at your beckoning call. You're busier than I am, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ron. I really appreciate it. Great to be back.
Thank you. Nice to have you here. Honorable Judge Douglas Ginsburg in the United States Court of Appeals, District of Columbia Circuit, and the name of the series on PBS is A More or Less Perfect Union. It's a three-part series. Check your local listings for the time and, of course, the PBS station it's on, and plus get the coffee table book, Voices of Our Republic, which is equally fascinating. Great guy. And there's more to come with Ron Sedgie today.